Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Welcome to Market View. Ryan Huang begins paternity leave today, so joining me to break down all the market action, Yep Jun Rong, market strategist with IG. Jun Rong, good morning. Good to have you with us this morning. Let's start with three big corporate stories. Now, the first involves the spin-off of a high-profile unit, and the second, a major acquisition in the pharmaceutical space, and the third appears to be an attempt here in Singapore to downsize and right-size a struggling business. So our companies in focus, Jun Rong, this morning are fast-moving consumer goods giant Unilever, the British drug giant AstraZeneca, and our very own SingPost. We'll start with Unilever, but first, a very important question, Jun Rong. Are you an ice cream fan?
Yes, I'm an ice cream fan.
Favorite flavor?
Sorry?
What is your favorite flavor?
Oh, I'll go for the plain old vanilla.
Plain old vanilla. Classic, but a good one. All right. The reason I ask is because Unilever is planning to spin off its ice cream brands into separate businesses. Unilever, listener, owns Ben & Jerry's and Magnum. So, Jun Rong, Unilever has a multitude of popular products in the realm of beauty and well-being and nutrition, even personal care. Why does it want to spin off the ice cream brands?
Yes, so I think the company has announced plans to really separate its ice cream unit, which includes, you know, Ben & Jerry and Magnum, as part of a restructuring that will affect 7,500 jobs. So the basis for that, the company kind of added that, you know, its ice cream division will perform better as a standalone business. I think for now, the ice cream division accounts for around 13% of Unilever's total revenue in 2023. My view is that, you know, the ice cream division by itself is kind of noted for its lower growth compared to Unilever's overall businesses. So, you know, this divesting may actually bode well for the main businesses itself. So it may allow, you know, the overall business to kind of streamline and kind of matching Unilever's aim of delivering a mid-single digit sales growth moving forward. Mm-hmm. And they also mentioned that after the split, you know, they may expect some modest marginal improvement. So I think what Unilever is trying to do is really to stick to its higher growth segment while, you know, consumers are now seeing this trend of sticking to cheaper brands. So, you know, spinning off this ice cream unit is definitely a very wise move.
Unilever is also undertaking a cost savings program that will lead to 7,500 fewer jobs. It says offloading the ice cream business will drive faster growth and higher margins. Investors have given the move a cautious thumbs up. Unilever shares initially jumped 5.5% on the news before finishing up about 3% in London yesterday. Jun Rong, the ice cream business is reportedly worth more than $18 billion. It might list in London, it might list in Amsterdam. Do you think it could fare better on its own rather than as part of a larger conglomerate?
I wouldn't say that the ice cream business may fare better on its own at the current moment. I think just looking at the performance, the ice cream business has particularly kind of struggled. I mean, amid this recent high inflation environment, largely because many consumers are switching to, you know, cheaper brands. They are being more cost conscious, and that's why demand for this ice cream business has been declining. So I would expect that trend to remain, largely, you know, as consumers will continue to stick to cheaper brands moving forward. So I would still think it is more of a beneficial move for the main Unilever business itself as compared to, you know, this ice cream unit.
Unilever's ice cream unit grossed nearly 8 billion euros last year, and it accounts for about 13% of Unilever's total business. Next up, let's turn to the world of pharmaceuticals, where AstraZeneca has announced a $2.4 billion deal to buy a company called Fusion Pharmaceuticals. Now, they specialize in a type of cutting-edge cancer treatment. Jun Rong, there have been lots of major deals in the pharmaceutical space. Just last week, AstraZeneca announced another $1 billion acquisition for a company whose research could help treat rare disease. Why do you think we're seeing so much activity in this space? And are you at all surprised by the size of the deals?
Yeah, so just to provide some statistics, I mean, in the global pharmaceutical space, in terms of value terms, M&A activity has actually increased by 149% in fourth quarter 2023. So this is, you know, this is 149% from the third quarter itself. So looking at this deal, it kind of marks a follow-through from the strong momentum that we have seen in terms of M&A across the industry. So what I see of it is that, you know, as demand moderate, you know, managing costs and trying to maintain the original margin are becoming crucial for many of these businesses. So turning to a merger will kind of improve the efficiency by, you know, sort of realizing some of the economies of scale and sort of realizing some of the cost synergy in terms of their business itself. So in terms of the size of these deals, I mean, billion-dollar deals are definitely huge. I mean, these companies are very huge conglomerate, and that means that resources are generally abundant, and that's where, you know, achieving cost synergy are definitely more possible.
Cost synergies. Let's take a look at this latest deal. Shares of Fusion Pharmaceuticals nearly doubled in U.S. trade overnight, while AstraZeneca fell about 0.5% in London. If we take a step back, Junrong, pharmaceutical companies have been adjusting, shall we say, in a post-pandemic world, sort of readjusting their portfolios, making acquisitions, as we've just discussed. Do you think this is a good time to look at investing in this sector?
Yes, so I mean, generally, when investors look at pharmaceutical sector, there may be some sort of reservations that, you know, you have to have a certain level of understanding in terms of the pharmaceutical space in order to invest in some of these companies. But nevertheless, I will still think that, you know, you can definitely look for companies that have sort of a strong pipeline, sort of a strong history of, you know, successfully bringing drugs to the market. On the broader scale, you know, if you compare the healthcare sector to the broader market, I think the healthcare sector has been sort of underperforming over the past few months and has not seen much of a traction compared to, you know, your growth sector such as technology. So I believe that this eventually may create opportunity for some catch-up growth if the risk environment were to turn more defensive over the coming months. Of course, largely dependent on whether we will see a greater economic risk moving forward. So I will still think that investors can actually keep an eye on this sector itself.
Interesting. Let's bring the conversation to Singapore now, where our third company in focus this morning is SingPost. It is planning to refocus its business solely on logistics. Now, this means divesting non-core assets, including ownership of its headquarters at SingPost in Paya Lebar. I realize SingPost is also a retail and commercial building. I was just there having lunch not long ago. Not just corporate headquarters, Great Mala place there, by the way, in case anybody wants to know. Doesn't it seem a bit strange for a company to want to sell off the building that has its name on it, SingPost Center in Paya Lebar?
Yes, I mean, this recent move kind of, you know, SingPost divesting its non-core assets. Once again, more of a streamlining is a business to focus on the core business itself. And SingPost Center, kind of a previous valuation back in September 2023, is at $1.1 billion. It is a very sizable amount. So sort of realizing this value may actually provide abundant, you know, resources for SingPost to develop its core assets, especially when the company hopes to transform itself fully into a logistic company within 3 years. So in my opinion, I believe the non-core asset has actually been one of the more resilient segments. So selling it off may no doubt provide a one-time boost to earnings, but eventually it is not sustainable. It will still depend on how they can help to turn around its main post business. Of course, whether they will share the gains with shareholders will be on investors' mind as well.
Yep.
So eyes will be on how much SingPost will increase its dividend. But once again, you know, the realizing of this divestment is one-off and is clearly not sustainable.
All right. SingPost also thinking about spinning off its Australian business, which has expanded over the past year. This past year, SingPost announced a return to the black with an $11 million profit driven in part by its logistics business down under. SingPost shares rose 6.5% yesterday. They're still down nearly 20% over the past year. And if you look at the charts, the stock really peaked nearly a decade ago, back in 2015. That was when it topped $2 a share. Today, SingPost trades at around 40 cents. Let's turn to Singapore now, where the Bank of Japan has raised interest rates for the first time in 17 years. We foreshadowed this on the show yesterday. Jin Rong, the Bank of Japan raised rates to a range of 0 to 0.1%, still really low. Remind us why this is such a momentous move.
Yes, I mean, if you were to recall, ever since the 1980s, Japan has really been stuck in this long period of deflation and low economic growth for decades, and hence are kind of forced to keep interest rate in negative territory to allow, you know, monetary policies to be supportive for economic growth. But recently, as you know, inflation and wage conditions are seeing some signs of a turnaround, it has seen some picking up. You know, Japan is finally able to sort of consider gradually exiting from this accommodative policy structure for the first time in years. So as you mentioned, they have managed to raise its short-term interest rate to around 0% to 0.1% from its previous negative territory, which really bodes well in terms of an exit from its negative interest rate policy.
Now that the era of negative interest rates is over, economists are divided on exactly where the BOJ goes from here. Will it raise rates again? Is this the start of an interest rate hike cycle? Jun Rong, what do you think?
Yeah, so I think there are some views that, you know, once the BOJ has make a first move at its latest meeting, you know, generally it can mark a further move. But actually, the central bank has actually stopped short of guiding for further tightening in yesterday's meeting. So that really led investors to really think of the recent move as really a dovish hike. I mean, the tone that the central bank exhibit is that it is in no rush in terms of a policy normalization. So that may really serve as a disappointment to some of the hawkish BOJ traders who were really expecting a quicker pace of a normalization given the trend of inflation and also wage data so far. So what I believe is that the call for more patience may actually reflect some policymakers' reservation around economic risk, along with further wait and see for the vicious cycle between wages and prices to play out. I mean, the central bank did put an end to its yield curve control policy. They also put an end to its ETF purchases, but they actually mentioned that they will still continue with its, Japanese government bond purchases, with, in their own words, broadly the same amount as before. So that is another sign that, you know, easy monetary conditions may sort of remain for longer.
Now that the higher rates would normally give a currency a boost, but yesterday the yen fell against the US dollar and other major currencies. In fact, against the greenback, it slipped past the 150 level, now trading at 151 to the US dollar. Jin Rong, what's going on? Why do you think investors are continuing to sell the yen?
Yeah, so just based on the rate hike itself, generally the convention is that it should provide a boost for the currency itself, right? But the tone and the guidance coming from the Bank of Japan that follow up with its recent hike is that they have really stopped short of guiding for further tightening. So they mentioned that they are really in no rush in terms of policy unwinding. And that really, you know, kept investors pulling back on their hawkish bets. And if you look at the rate expectation following the meeting, there was actually a recalibration in a broad consensus. So markets, based on the tone from the Bank of Japan, markets are currently pricing for rates to actually remain unchanged, at least over the next three Bank of Japan meetings. So that is somewhat of a dovish recalibration from before. So even though we are seeing this, first rate hike from the Bank of Japan in 17 years, generally, markets are looking at the tone from the Bank of Japan and saying that, yes, this could potentially be just a one-off and the central bank will still stick to its very gradual pace of a policy unwinding moving forward.
Great details. Well, Japanese equities rallied on the new BOJ policy. The Nikkei finished up 0.2% yesterday. Joining me this morning, Yap Jin Rong, market strategist with IG. I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning, everybody. Let's take a quick look at Wall Street now. The S&P 500 closed at a record high overnight as investors await an update from the U.S. Federal Reserve tonight. The S&P 500 rose 0.5% to 51.70. 28. The Dow did even better. It rose 0.8%. The Nasdaq finished higher as well. All right, let's turn to corporate news. We do it up or down style. We figure out where it's moving. Companies like Chipotle Mexican Grill, up or down? What do you think?
I will give it an up. I think recently the board has approved a 50-for-1 stock split. This is an unusually large move. Mm-hmm. And generally, when we talk about a stock split, it may, you know, spur some buying as investors may see the stock as being somewhat cheaper, even though, I mean, the underlying value of the overall company remains unchanged. And if you look at the technical, it has also reached a new high. So generally, a continuation of the upward trend. And that's why I believe it deserves an up, in my opinion.
I join you there. 50-for-1 stock split. In fact, one of the biggest stock splits in U.S. history. So if shareholders approve this, investors will receive 49 new shares for every one share that they own. And the share split is expected to take effect in June. Chipotle shares finished higher on the news. All right. What do you think, Coke or Pepsi? Which do you think is up? Which do you think is down on the topic of food?
Pepsi. Probably an up.
Correct, Junrong. I sprung that one on you. In the U.S., I'd say Pepsi is an up, while Coca-Cola on the down. This is because Subway is replacing Coke with Pepsi in all its U.S. stores. I bet you didn't know that. All right, from Subway, we'll swing to Indonesia's GoTo, which is Indonesia's biggest tech company. Is it looking like an up for you?
Yes, I think GoTo probably deserves an up as well. Kind of reached a key milestone lately in terms of profitability. So clearly, its recent cost-cutting efforts are sort of working. I mean, it's EBITDA has turned positive,
yeah,
and they're actually planning a share buyback of, you know, up to $200 million.
Mm.
So in current environment where demand is moderating, being able to turn in a positive profit will be key for many of these growth companies. And GoTo has managed to do it. So I think they deserve an up, in my opinion.
Yeah, so GoTo now profitable. At least its operations are. GoTo nets at $6.6 million in the fourth quarter of the year. It's also planning a $200 million US dollar share buyback. So that is an up for GoTo. Let's look at cocoa prices.
Yes, I think cocoa prices has definitely delivered a historic high. So, I mean, for those who want to buy chocolate for Easter, expect a bigger hole in your wallet for sure.
Oh, boy.
Yes, I think the catalyst around that historic high in cocoa prices has really been the changing weather. So that has kind of threatened cocoa tree production, heavier rainfall as well, kind of caused an increase in diseases among cocoa tree. So that has pushed cocoa prices to a all-time high. But generally on that front, you know, I wouldn't expect the catalyst to drag on over the longer term. And based on technicals itself, generally it is an extreme overbought territory. So I will expect to see some form of a retracement over the coming weeks to, you know, sort of moderate from its historic high. So I'll give it a down.
Cocoa prices are skyrocketing. Listener, just four countries are responsible for some 70% of the world's cocoa production. I looked into it. Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, Nigeria, and Cameroon are the countries in question. But harvests have been poor over the past couple of years, and that is sending cocoa prices skyrocketing. It's also leading analysts to lower their forecasts for candy makers like Delphi, which is listed here in Singapore, by the way. So that is an up for cocoa prices, down for Delphi. Also down for us chocolate lovers who might be feeling that hole in the wallet soon, forced to pay higher prices. Oh dear. All right, finally, before we let you go, what do you think of Xiaomi?
Yes, Xiaomi will be an up, in my opinion. Recent results, 10.9% increase in the fourth quarter revenue and kind of beat its profit estimates as well. So it does show that there are some signs of a recovery after, you know, it has been stuck in this long period of a sluggishness in terms of smartphone sales. So I think these recent results do display some form of a green shoots, some form of a recovery in place. And technically, share price are also starting to see some form of a pickup. It has just recently pushed to near its year-to-date high. So generally, I believe that the momentum may potentially continue moving forward. So that's why I will give it an up.
Yep, Jun Rong is a market strategist with IG. We've loved chatting with you. Thank you so much, Jun Rong. Check in with you tomorrow.
Thank you, Michelle.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.